Welcome to the Akashic Reading Podcast, presented by AkashicReading.com, the place where you can learn to access your soul's wisdom, or at least stop digging the hole any deeper. I'm your host, Terry Uktana, and today we'll be discussing Madame Blavatsky, her legacy, and how she brought the words Akasha and the Akashic Records into Western culture. But first, a trigger warning. Religious and spiritual practices of the Victorian era incorporated what we now know as colonialism, racism, and anti-Semitism. These and their ongoing effects will be noted throughout this episode. Also, while Madame Blavatsky was accused of being a fraudulent channel and medium, this doesn't negate the value of currently practicing channels or mediums, nor is it meant to denigrate their valuable work. So to begin, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky is one of the most influential but least known figures in Western spirituality today. While there is so much variety in spiritual practices throughout the spiritual, not religious, alternative, Wiccan, pagan, witchcraft, New Age spirituality, and spiritual seeker communities, there are foundational pieces or bits we all agree on and assume is just part of the landscape, many of which she's responsible for, including the prove-it-to-me requirements for spiritual practitioners, the notion of universal wisdom, the formation of Western mystery schools, borrowing the authority of spiritual masters, and the Sanskrit term Akasha, just to name a few. Madame Blavatsky isn't famous for an invention, discovering something new, or uncovering long-forgotten mysteries, although she wanted people to believe she did all three. Instead, she became the archetypal Western spiritual seeker, someone searching for an uncorrupted, powerful, unifying spiritual truth by which to guide her path. In so doing, she ended up exhibiting much of the best and worst such seeking has to offer. For this to make sense, I need to set the scene. Let's go back in time from the mid-1800s to almost the turn of the century. America has already been split into two halves, fought a horrific civil war, and then worked to put itself back together. As in all times of upheaval and transformation, this creates opportunities for new industries, the mixing of various cultural groups, fostering innovation, and causing people to look for answers outside the box. New American spiritualities exploded into being during this time as people worked to heal, especially in New England and the Upper East Coast, Mormonism being one of the most famous examples. At the same time, in Europe, Britain was the empire on which the sun never set, but the other major European powers were still vying to colonize what little hadn't already been subjugated. However, the relationships between rulers and subjects were getting old. Like in any marriage, the romance was gone and the long haul of being together day to day had set in. Meanwhile, the scientific age was being born, with the publishing of Darwin's books on the natural world and evolution, causing upheaval in all aspects of society, especially the spiritual and religious. The scientific method set out to challenge religion, creating the argument we know today as reproducible results and physical proof versus faith and belief. But during the Victorian era, many found neither to be satisfactory to their needs. Mixed into all this change, uncertainty, and questioning was the Victorians' existing fascination with the Orient. Think the Middle East, Egypt, and Northern Africa with India, Mongolia, and China. Those no longer satisfied with existing religions and/or scientific explanations concerning the world began exploring the Orient for hidden spiritual wisdom to replace what was falling apart in more general society. This seeking also fostered the formation of, and rumors around, the existence of mystery schools, which purported to have learned ancient secrets for spiritual power, human development, and control over the natural world. Within all of this comes Madame Blavatsky, somewhat an Indiana Jones of her day. She was born in Russia to mid-level aristocracy, so was well-educated for a woman of her time. Being Russian, she was fluent in French, which was required of the elite in their society, as well as English, and she took on rudimentary knowledge of other languages throughout her life. She was intelligent, strong-willed, and uninterested in the constrained life of a woman in high society. She read extensively, including her grandfather's occult library, and when it came time for her to marry, she fought against it. She wasn't successful, and so was married to Nikifor Blavatsky at age 17. He was much older, she wasn't interested in sex, marriage, or having children at the time, and regardless of what people tried to force her into, the marriage ended up being mainly in name only. She accepted it as a necessity for her to be respectable, as well as a way to get funding when she had no other means to support her life. From here, things become archetypal, mythical, and mysterious on purpose. Madame Blavatsky herself used and admitted to some of the oldest tricks of the book to fudge facts about her early adult activities, blurring the details, and turning herself into whoever she wanted to be in the moment. There are large numbers of books which tear into all this as a means of figuring out fact from fiction, and more being written all the time. However, what's more interesting here is not the truth, but the mythos she was creating. As the Indiana Jones of spirituality, she started traveling to discover spiritual truths throughout the Orient. At a time when women did not travel alone, she spent time in Egypt with spiritual teachers, sailed up and down the African coast, traveled the Silk Road into India, Bangladesh, and Burma, which is now called Myanmar, and she claimed to have made it to what was then the epitome of spirituality, Tibet. At the time, it was still its own sovereign country, impossible to enter due to geography and a military which didn't want outsiders intruding, and supposedly the true Shangri-La or heaven on earth. While there's evidence to support her having made two different attempts to do so, there isn't any that she actually made it or had any substantive interactions with Tibetans. From these initial journeys, she began a path she would walk for the rest of her life, creating herself into a spiritual leader who would bring long-lost wisdom to Western society for the betterment of all mankind. While the wisdom part ends up being questionable at best, all the various ways she went about this are still with us today. Starting with, prove to me it's real. As this was the time period where people had seances for fun, were into rapping and tapping to communicate with spirits, were discovering spirit photography and having spiritual parties on a regular basis, Blavatsky started out by performing as what we would now call a medium. She was adept at not only voicing the spirits of people who had passed on, but causing people to see them as apparitions before their eyes. There's no evidence she used the common at the time magic tricks to pull this off, such as hidden mirrors, but as she found easier and better means for attracting followers, she quickly ended up dismissing mediumship as not worth anyone's time. However, seeing spiritual practices as entertainment or infotainment, and requiring practitioners to provide spectacle to prove the validity of their services, are with us today. Hence, many readers and energy workers will include crystals when they aren't really necessary to their work, include prayers and call in various spirit beings to be present as the intro to a session, leave themselves open to channel if something comes through, and so on. So then there's the notion of universal spiritual wisdom. Blavatsky felt there must be a universal root spiritual wisdom which humanity could access. Being a woman of her time, she viewed this not only through a Christian lens, but also through the perspective of European colonialism. This means she looked for a wisdom which must have existed since the beginning of time, but had become lost or corrupted as humans were in a fallen state, which means there could only be fragments left. Obviously, Protestant and Catholic sources were of no use, as they had fostered the mess humanity was currently in, and ironically, she dismissed Christianity entirely as having little to nothing useful in it while being firmly entrenched in all its biases. Instead, she looked to quote-unquote lesser cultures who were unaware and incapable of understanding what they had. She intended to take the pieces she found, reinterpret them with her superior knowledge and understanding, thereby recreating the ancient wisdoms and set humanity back on course towards spiritual enlightenment. To this end, she studied Kabbalah, but in a form which had been developed by Christians. She and many, if not most, in the spiritual community at the time considered Jews as a lesser race and incompetent of understanding their own spiritual teachings, especially the mysticism of Kabbalah. She read about ancient Egypt, but this was before the Rosetta Stone, and so Egyptology was less a science and more like silly putty. People studying ancient artifacts could assign them any meaning they wanted. This caused many fantastical theories and entire spiritualities to be created based on nothing but opinions and desires. Blavatsky was also one of the first Westerners to value and accept Buddhism as a spirituality, and in fact took Pansel, the rite in Hinayana Buddhism of undertaking ceremonially a set of 5 precepts of morality, towards the middle of her life. From these sources and more, she pulled pieces which fit her needs, but were often out of context, and attempted to develop or rediscover a universal spiritual wisdom. This idea of universal spiritual wisdom flourished at a time when Western culture felt it was the epitome of all human development. Other cultures were seen as less than, and therefore irrelevant, which means you could be an expert in Hinduism without ever having learned to read the texts, or talk to a Hindu person, or been to India, for example. Context didn't matter, culture was irrelevant, and the nuances of language and meaning could be ignored. We now know context really does matter, cultural appropriation does harm, and the term universal must be inclusive of other cultures rather than denigrating them. Unfortunately, these negative universality practices still exist in spirituality today, with ayahuasca ceremonies being taken out of cultural context and offered as a commodity, with Native American ceremonies being created and performed by those who have never studied with any tribe, generalized versions of chakra work being taught outside the holistic healing practice of Ayurveda, and Kabbalah being something sold to celebrities in Kabbalah centers which have little to do with Judaism. While all humans are human, trying to discover universal spiritual truths while ignoring cultural context ends up being a bit like having a long conversation via text. Things get misconstrued, portions come through out of order, meaning gets misconstrued at best, huge chunks of what is necessary to communicate anything beyond raw facts is missing, and in the end, it often causes more trouble than it's worth. So then, there's the mystery schools. Combining the model of elite higher education with spiritual seeking, mystery schools went viral in the Victorian era. Madame Blavatsky founded her own, called the Theosophical Society, which still exists in several forms today. Members could access the hidden wisdoms Blavatsky had discovered, become an adept at various spiritual practices, and join others in what they saw as a process of spiritual evolution. She wrote several books, which are still available today. While intended to be a means for her followers to learn about and practice universal wisdom, they're full of attempts to merge spirituality with the science of the day, as well as demonstrate its veracity by saying what amounts to, "Because I say so, and everyone else is wrong." Also, side note, her writing style was chaotic at best, and so the message and even her train of thought often gets lost, which makes them a difficult read. Even for the experts, these books cause head-scratching moments, confusion, and also a bit of hilarity as she contradicts herself from one book to another, and her scientific assertions are often quaint considering what we know and work with today. Like most schools of the time, there was little mystery to them. They were a means for like-minded individuals to come together, discuss, and practice their spiritual path. The interest in mystery schools of this nature continues today, with seekers paying to join organizations where spiritual leaders purporting to know hidden knowledge and spiritual techniques teach, lecture, and provide various spiritual practices. Which leads us to the authority of spiritual masters. Blavatsky may be best known for her interactions with the masters. These were supposed to be highly evolved souls who embodied as human beings in order to monitor and help guide the rest of humanity. They would hide their true nature, live inconspicuously or in hiding, speak to each other and students or chosen acolytes telepathically, send physical written messages to their chosen representatives through the power of their minds, and appear as apparitions to those who develop their own spiritual abilities enough to receive the visions. Disagreements rage on this today, on whether or not the masters are real. There's evidence which points towards them not being so, in part because they stopped interacting with humanity soon after Madame Blavatsky died, but also because she got caught manufacturing evidence of their existence. Over the years, she and many others received written letters and messages from them which dropped mysteriously from the ceiling, appeared in cabinets, and were found on the floor. These messages always agreed with whatever Blavatsky believed or wanted others to believe at the time, and so their wisdom changed as she discovered things, changed her mind, or had revelations, all of which she worked to hand-wave away when it was pointed out to her. Handwriting experts examined some of these written missives and found they were incredibly similar, if not identical, to Blavatsky's own handwriting. Eventually, two of her own employees showed investigators the false back on one of the cabinets where the messages appeared most frequently. Whether or not the masters were real, the purpose for them was to lend a level of authenticity to her work, her writings, and the Theosophical Society. This is a time-honored tradition of most religions and spiritualities, including, for example, those who claimed for centuries that the first five books of the Bible were written by Moses. How he described his own death in them is not explained. The Book of Mormon, which was supposedly gifted to Joseph Smith by an angel, or the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which was hidden in various spots in the Himalayas until the people were ready to receive its teachings. The legacy of this continues with us today, as people claim association with a lineage, to have the blessing of archangels or ascended masters, or to have been gifted with techniques from some long-ago spiritual person wanting to bring their wisdom back into this now. Yet whether or not the source or authority of any practice or wisdom is true, in the end, what matters is what is actually being presented and if it's a good fit for you. Which brings us to the term Akasha. Blavatsky came into contact with Hinduism and Buddhism in her travels to India, which was then a British colony. She never set herself the task of learning about either thoroughly, although she found Buddhism to be the closest she ever came to finding a philosophy or spirituality which matched her own understanding of the universe. She and her business partner, Henry Steele Alcott, took the initial steps towards conversion, but never went much further with it. Their influence in Southern Asia was extensive, however, and ironically, the Theosophical Society was an integral part of India breaking free from British rule and becoming a sovereign nation. The original intention of the society was to facilitate further spread of theosophy by negotiating better relations between local governments and the crown, helping the crown to further solidify its rule and further civilize a less than evolved population. To do this, they worked to reinstate pre-colonial legal systems at the local level, which were more functional than what existed at that time, supported the formation of the Indian National Congress to create a central hub for government, and helped with clear communication between the two parties. However, this served to empower the Indian people and gave Gandhi, as well as others, the tools to start the process of self-rule. And the rest is history, as they say. Meanwhile, Blavatsky took pieces and parts from Hinduism and Buddhism, which fit her needs, much to the disappointment and eventual disgust of her Indian contacts, and brought them back with her to Europe and America. The most notable of these were the terms Akasha and the Akashics. The concept of Akasha as life force energy already existed in Western culture, as it does in most cultures, since it's a field just like gravity or electromagnetism. However, this new term moved it from the pseudoscience of alchemy, where it was called ether, and into universal spiritual wisdom. Plus, it gave her followers an easy means of talking about and referencing Akashic work, Akasha as energy, and all the practices which go along with it. Over time, the term was adopted by the broader spiritual community as it was discussed, argued over, written about, and merged into spiritual practice. Few know it comes from Sanskrit and the Vedas, and instead seek it out amongst all the other spiritual modalities available to us in the 21st century. So in the end, Madame Blavatsky wasn't a pioneer in any of these areas. She was, however, the epitome of these practices, a woman of and for her time, and an influential archetype whose influence reverberates through spiritual community to this day. If you're interested in learning more about her, you can find additional reading in the Theosophy section of my Akashic reading list. I'll put a link to it in the podcast description. And that's all the time we have this week. If you're interested in knowing more, check out my website, akashicreading.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider supporting it by subscribing on Patreon. You can see all my other offerings and get regular updates about what I'm working on at patreon.com/TerryUchtena. Thanks. Bye.